Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval, variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. The French electronic duo Justice have recently released their much-anticipated fourth studio album, Hyperdrama. I've been sitting on this album for a while. I was invited to a listen back session with Justice, and I have been mulling over this electronic record, which fuses organic sounds, electronic sounds, things I can't even quite identify. And I knew I had to speak with Justice because this musical work for me is beyond comprehension. Here's my conversation with Justice about their album, Hyperdrama.
Hello, I'm Xavier of Justice.
Hello, I'm Gaspar of Justice.
I'm so thrilled to have this conversation. I remember the moment that I got your first album, Cross, which I'm very confused is currently called Justice on Spotify.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, no. But I think it's because they can't find like the because it's not called Cross either. It's just like the cross symbol.
Yeah, it was unnamed. Yeah.
But it was not unnamed. It was named after a symbol. And that's why when we talk about it, we always refer to it as our debut album. Because there's no speakable name for it. It's just like a visual symbol.
Yeah, it's the symbol.
Okay, wonderful. All right, so your debut album, I purchased it in 2007, and I listened to it for an entire summer straight. You know, this was back when we had a CD player in a car, and it just sat in the CD player for the entire year.
Good times.
I want to go back to that moment because I feel like it's relevant to some of the sounds that we hear on Hyperdrama. With your debut album, what musical statement were you wanting to make?
It was pretty much the same statement as we've been making on all four albums, which is to make the music as dramatic as possible. And also it was our first album and we had no experience in making music, in engineering, in anything. It's not a punk record because it doesn't sound anything like punk music. But the approach to it, it's like, okay, let's make an album. And without having any clue in this regard, it's one album in a lifetime for us, and it would be impossible to try to remake something like this because so much of it is due to lack of knowledge and freshness.
Sometimes when we are learning our craft, the things that we don't do quite right become these happy accidents that become part of our identity. Were there any of those things that you were searching for, you were trying to learn, that became part of Justice?
Well, the thing is that this is all happy accidents. And for example, like when we started making music, we were aware that the music we were making didn't sound as good. I'm just talking sonics and not like sound as the real sound, because at the end, to us, what sounds good is what sounds stylish and what brings like the most emotion out of something. So we are like, okay, do we try to make it sound good or do we try to make it sound as loud and distorted as possible and as excessive as possible? And we also knew as music listeners that most of the records we like, they don't sound good in terms of like hi-fi terms, but they sound great because they have style. Any rock and roll band that we like, I prefer 10 times the sound of The Who to the sound of like any new rock band of today that sound huge that has a lot of bass, a lot of space, like 14 takes of guitars that are like perfectly produced. And we also noticed that the music that is recorded maybe in rougher ways, it ages better.
Mm.
So, and it's very, very much the case in rock and roll, in rap, in electronic music too. Like the electronic music that we liked from the beginning was always the stuff that were more like gritty. And for example, if you take like a Video Clash by Lil Louis, that is probably even more dirty than anything we have done on our first album. It still sounds amazing. It doesn't belong to really any specific period. Whereas like the dance music that's produced, like that is clean and everything, it tends to age a bit less well. So when given the choice, and we didn't really have a choice because we didn't know how to do anything, we're like, okay, like let's make it a statement and let's make sure that the listeners understand that they are listening to something that is over dirty, over saturated, over loud and everything.
This kind of innocence can only happen once, but we are still trying to keep that mindset in the sense that to us there's also no hierarchy between genre, and there's no good taste or bad taste. Like when we first began, like we were in love with I don't know, like the Buggles, with the White Stripes, with Human League, with John Carpenter soundtrack. To us, it was just okay. Like we're just gonna inject everything we love in that record and make up for the sonics like defects by making it weird in a way, but so that it can serve the purpose of the record. And it was not complete like conscious decision in the sense that to us it sounded right. But it was we didn't enter the studio, okay, like let's make something revolutionary. It was very natural for us to do something like the punks we were at the time.
You've explored so many sonic spaces since 2007. I've been enmeshed in all of your albums, but I feel like now with Hyperdrama, you strongly evoke a visual and sonic identity that hints towards the debut album. Is this a return to form of some sorts? And if so, how come?
Now, we've heard that after the listening sessions, and because of the way it's produced, I can see the connection, because basically in our debut album was we were writing songs with Gaspar in a very classical way, you know, like with like keyboards, bass, guitars, you know, just by playing. And then when we had something that we liked, we would replace every note of the score. By a small sample, not all the time, but like most of the times. So we would make a bass line, for example, and then we would need like a F sharp. So we would like listen to records until we find an F sharp that we like the sound of, or maybe a F or a G, and then like tune it, put it, paste it. Okay, then we're looking for the next note, and we would like just keep on listening until we find something, then cut it, paste it. And we were doing the same with like drums, for chords. It was like a very long process because we had like many notes and they had like to work together. For like, it makes me think of like, for example, a song like New Jack. You have like some chord, some sort of like it's a bit like when you play guitar,
like a strum.
Yeah exactly. And we found like those like sounds in the database of the computer, and then we were like tuning each note of that like small strum sound to get our chords. So it was a very long process, and actually on Hyperdrama we didn't do the same thing, but because we wanted for everything to sound as one, we would like record our parts, play them, produce them, making a rough mix, then printing everything, then importing it again, then like processing it again with new elements and everything, then printing it and then re-importing it again. So at the end, it sounds like something that has been sampled like 3, 4, 5 times. The point of doing that was to have this sort of like glue and varnish on every generation of bounces that we're making, so that when we re-import like those like stems in our song, it becomes very hard to discernate what's being like humanly played, what are synths, mm-hmm. even what the instruments are doing, because you can't separate anymore what's like the keyboard, what's playing the bass. It's all like intertwined and pressed together. So in that regard, I think the fact that everything sounds like it has like 10 layers of varnish on it, and the playfulness of the song structures, the energy, I can see the connection between this and our debut album.
I hear in the opening couple of songs, almost like a red herring of what I think the album is going to be and then what it turns into. Because when you open with Neverender, with Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, has this very smooth vocal. For me, it has almost like hints of D-A-N-C-E. When we go to Generator, the intensity of it, that sort of John Carpenter horror feeling, reminds me somewhat of Stress from the debut album. But then this technique that you talk about the sort of resampling yourself, I start going on this sonic journey. It almost turns into like this hallucination. These early works that are maybe feel a little bit familiar, things that, oh yeah, I know Justice. I love Justice. All of a sudden, I'm going into songs that have completely untraditional song forms that feel as though I'm not listening to one album, but it feels like I'm listening to 4 albums that you have written and then remixed and done a DJ set reduced down to this is the live remix of this much larger work. And I don't know what I am listening to. Am I listening to the original recording? Am I listening to these samples? It takes me on an entire sonic journey. And so I think it's just those first few tracks that remind me, oh, this feels like classic Justice. And then I go somewhere totally different.
Yeah, but that's great to hear first. And also like the way we structure our albums has always been more or less the same, is that we like starting with something that makes you feel home or in like known landscapes. And when we started working on our second album, on Audio Video Disco, we thought like for some weeks and we debated and then we didn't do it, but we're like, okay, maybe we should start every album with the theme of Genesis. And then go on to like another song. Because what made us think of that was that when you sit down in a cinema and you see like the 20th Century Fox theme, you know you're in a cinema and you know you're in for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours of a film. So it puts you in some sort of condition so that you know you're somewhere, you know more or less what you can expect, but of course you don't know everything, and then it unfolds. And we didn't do it, but whether it was Horsepower, Civilization on the second album, or Safe and Sound, Pleasure on Woman, Neverender, Generator, After Image, One Night. It's just here like to so you feel a bit at home at the beginning, and it sets a kind of tone for what may follow. And then from there, we expand on things and then take turns at some point. But yeah, like what you just said makes perfect sense to us.
I have to say that in addition to working as a music journalist, I also teach at NYU and one of their music schools. And when my students lose attention, they start chatting, or maybe at the beginning of class, I need to get their attention, I turn my volume all the way up on my computer and I play Genesis. And immediately they all stop. It gets their attention. They say, oh, okay, we're in music school now. And pause it right after those opening notes. So it has served a great utility for me as setting a scene as well.
That's cool.
Yeah, that makes for a good entrance when you start a class and you start with this. Because for us, like Genesis was really like a gladiator song, you know. It's something you put in the arena before coming in.
Part of the inspiration for this album and the way that you constructed these samples feels very inspired by an era of sampling which is no longer really feasible.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing we like about what most people called French Touch number one, is that these guys really have a talent to spot like those like 2 seconds or 3 seconds of a track that one's gonna they're gonna be looped. It's making like a whole different song. They're picking like the best part of that track to the point where like listening to the original tracks, they feel like everything around is a waste, you know, because they could have like made just that one loop. And that's actually the loop that you want to listen to forever. And that was part of the thing we were thinking about when we started working on this album. We thought, let's try to streamline our music and to reduce it always to one or maybe two loops to make something that is very precise, sharp in terms of emotion. I'm taking this one as an example. It's not a very good example. I mean, it's a good example on a pop level, and not personally because we both are not huge fans of this song, but Music Sounds Better With You by Stardust. Great tune, of course. It's not our favorite from like this period, but for what it is, it's amazing. It's like 1 second of a Chaka Khan record that has been looped. Listening to that Chaka Khan song, it seems crazy that they didn't focus on that one loop, but that they wrote a whole song around it. And the Stardust song, because it's a sample, because it's one loop, because they have one modulation in the bass line that makes like the whole song, it becomes new, futuristic for the time. And it's impressive like to see like all these guys having this talent of like spotting that one thing and making a loop that the whole planet wanted to listen to forever. So without doing the same thing, the idea that came through was that we should try like to reduce and streamline our music. So instead of making like 5 different chord progressions in one song, we just like write until we have that one thing that we love and that we want to loop. And most of the songs, apart from I think 2 or 3, they are loop based. But then we also saw the bad side of it and we're thinking, okay, like all those tracks, even the one we love the idea, we love the concept, we love like the result, but we never listen to them in their entirety. And that's a good, Stardust again is a great example. It's like, it was like a huge hit. I think I've never listened to more than 2 minutes of that track because after 1 minute, you've heard everything you had to hear. And we're like, okay, so now it's like we are making loop-based music. How do we do it so it like unfolds over like 3, 4, 5 minutes and you never get bored? And actually, this kind of like parallel tracks running, this kind of abrupt transition, like the structures, it came also from this idea of like making loop-based music that always feels surprising.
Guess what? You both were designers before being musicians. Is there a sense that you're almost working from like a design brief when you're approaching an album?
I mean, yeah, we don't have a physical mood board in the studio, but it's an endless like exchange, like whether it's for a track idea or artwork cover or a video idea, there's always something like triggering like those ways of expressing what we want to convey. And so like it can be anything, like it can be like a painting, like an image.
Yeah, you know, like and we were like both graphic designers, and the thing that we kept from graphic design is that when you do graphic design, you don't make art for art's sake. Like graphic design is about to be able to translate an idea into an image. And for us, music is more or less the same thing, is that it's about transposing an idea, something we talk about, or sensation, into a music. That's the way we make it. Although the big difference is that when we make music, we really make music for the sake of making music, and it has no other purpose. Whereas on graphic design, there was like a very specific purpose. And the ideas we had was like to, like this kind of thing of having like parallel universes sort of within the same track and going from one to the other very abruptly. And that came from like sampling and everything. We're like, oh, what if we had like the original sample, you have the end result, and you just go from one to the other like this, just like if you are pressing a button.
Where's an example of that on the album?
One Night All Night, like the disco part in the middle and like the other parts, they are exactly the same same music, it's the same arrangement, same chords, same vocal line, same everything. But there's just one part that is made with all electronic synth kind of rave sound. And there's the other part that's made with like human played drums, human played bass, and going from like the first chorus, for example, to the midsection. Especially the first time you hear it, because you have no idea it's gonna come. It's like, oh, okay, I'm like in this kind of like ravey situation, and it stops all of a sudden. And then you have this kind of like walking bass, very like light organic drums, and you have like, it's the same song but dressed up completely differently, and it's fun to have both versions of the same song within one song. And Generator is like this. Episodes of this in that.
Incognito, I feel like, is another great example.
Incognito, yeah, definitely.
That song, for me, really captures this idea that you spoke of earlier of resampling yourself over and over again, because there's moments of clear live instrumentation. And then there's these moments where there's just micro chops of tiny little seconds of things, and I don't even know what I'm hearing. And that's why I think I described this album as somewhat hallucinatory, because I'm sort of being pulled in and out of a mental space that is dissociative.
Yeah.
It feels like I know what I'm hearing, and then all of a sudden I don't. And then you take me to this huge epic rock outro in Incognito. And so, in just a few minutes, I've gone on this entire sonic trip.
No, but it definitely makes sense, because it was a while ago, but I remember like doing some mushrooms once and walking back home. And for some reason, I could hear like every conversation in every house, in every cab passing by. And it has a bit the same feeling in the end, like you time and space don't really make sense, and you can hear bits and bobs of stuff. But and obviously we did it in a very sober and clear state of mind. but it has this this kind of psychedelic sensation about it. Yeah.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval, variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com. You have a wonderful palate cleanser right in the middle of the album called Moonlight Rendezvous, which feels to me like it's Careless Whisper as interpreted by Beethoven, but misremembered and digitally degraded over the decades. Tell me about Moonlight Rendezvous. How did this sound end up on the album?
To us, like the writer, the way we composed it was like, we grew up listening to French singer-songwriters such as like Serge Gainsbourg.
Je t'aime. Je t'aime. Oui, je t'aime.
Michel Berger. There was something very gloomy about it in a way, and we felt that transposing it into a more like futuristic landscape, like we liked the challenge of making like a song that's a saxophone and piano theme, and then try to find ways of making it sound futuristic with such a few elements. And there's also a lot of like those kind of like Blade Runner type of sensations. When we talk about that track, and it's half a joke because it's really like what we were talking about when we were making it. It's like a private eye, a cheap whiskey, a shitty day, and
rainy Vegas city.
Yeah, guy comes back home and the investigation is blocked, doesn't have any new clues, and he's looking through the window. And it's like raining, and all you can see is like androids and neons on the through the window. Like, how nerd can we go in your show?
You can go deep.
Before every record, we just pick a set of instruments, and we make the whole record with those instruments. Like, for example, Audio Video Disco was made with a mellotron and a guitar. And for this one, we fell in love with that synth that's called the PPG. A wave PPG, and it's a 2.3 or 2.2, I can't remember which one is ours. And we loved it because it's one of the first digital synthesizer, and it's a 12-bit synthesizer, so it has this kind of 12-bit aliasing.
Yeah, that digital distortion, that like that grainy sound. And I hear it on Moonlight Rendezvous. I hear that graininess. It's on a lot of places.
Yes.
It feels old and degraded.
Yeah, it sounds like a dying replicant.
Yeah, there's a very uncanny valley to it, because there's a lot of sort of vocal-like sounds, these formanty, vowel-y things, but they're not quite human.
Yeah,
and we loved it because also one of the things we wanted for this record is we wanted it to sound digital and futuristic. And we are not obsessed at all with analog gear or whatever. And most of the research we did for this album were in the digital world. We did like a lot of resynthesis using a lot of digital tools. Synthesizers, they don't really appeal to us for what they are. And in the studio, we have like all the like classic synths, and they're just like taking the dust in a corner of the studio, because when you take a CS80 and you play a chord on it or whatever, and it sounds already like something you've heard like a million times, And the PPG, it was great because it was both, it has the thickness and it takes the space of what you would want from a classic analog synthesizer, while having all those kind of idiosyncrasies that belong to the digital world, even the way it's programmed and everything. And we fell in love with that. And there's that sound that is on Moonlight Rendezvous that was too beautiful not to be used.
So there are these digital sounds being resynthesized, degraded. What does that texture, what does that timbre evoke for you?
I wouldn't say they are degraded. I would say they are upgraded.
Because surely,
because we don't degrade things for the sake of. Every time we would do that, we didn't feel that we are degrading things. Actually, we felt that it was like giving them more space, more texture, more dimension too,
and a lot of more harmonics and stuff. Yeah.
So for us, it's more like an upgrade.
I'm getting the sense, I don't mean to pigeonhole you and say, oh, you are a bunch of designers who learned to make music. But I do keep seeing this theme of there is an iterative process that you all use in your music creation, which I think especially in the world of more electronic and dance music is not necessarily the norm. Oftentimes you get in the computer and you just keep on clicking and you keep building in your track and you build it out in the DAW and then you're done and you hit print. In your process, there is a lot of going in the computer, out of the computer, thinking about something, making demos, dance tracks that are from a very deliberate process. Maybe it's explorative and fun. It reminds me much more of the world of fine arts than it does maybe how I think of most dance music being made. Is that an accurate way of thinking about it?
I mean, it happens like once in a while that we... Like to us, being able to work like the way you describe it, like just making things and then you finish it, like it happens when you have a stroke of genius, and it can happen once in a while, maybe every 5 years, that we start a song and it just unfolds and we're like, oh wow, it's finished, and we're happy with it, but it's very rare, unfortunately, and a lot of the times we just build up things slowly and. And over the course of like 3 years and a half working on this record, we knew that reaching the end of the process, we would want to go back on things because we make these demos, these songs, and then we let them rest for like 2-3 years. And when we come back to them, of course, because as it goes, we refine the method, we are like... We find new treatments, new things, and we want to apply them on the rest of the record. So yes, that's definitely a lot of iterations. And this is what we tell to everyone we're working with, whether it's on like the visual side or on anything. It's really, really rare to land something good on first attempts. It can happen, of course, but it's like... It's too rare to count on it, really.
Right.
And so sometimes you have an ID, maybe it's the wrong ID, or maybe there's one part of that ID that needs to be developed, and it can take like 10, 20, 100 or 200 attempts until you reach like the state where you feel, okay, that was the right thing.
Yeah, and also this is probably why we are not very good at making proper dance music, because we can't really be satisfied with linear music. So there has to be an element of surprise or deception or some accidents. And most of the dance music is very linear to us. And so I guess, yeah, that's why it's a bit of a struggle to make something that is only dance floor efficient.
I grew up, my mom ran an art gallery. And so I got to know all kinds of different artists and art processes. And what I'm reminded of in this conversation are some of my favorite artists are the ceramicists. Because if you want to make a teapot, you have to go through finding the right clay, molding it the right way, knowing the right heating and stages of heating, knowing the right glazes, but also accepting that in that entire process, there are things that are going to be out of your control. A slight variation in the kiln is going to create some sort of pop or bubble. And sometimes those mistakes are also beautiful. And so to get to that finished product, oftentimes you kind of have to, you know, try three or four times. You're going to break a few pots. It doesn't matter. But you eventually get that well-glazed, perfect pot that you're looking for. And I hear a little bit of sort of that method in the construction of your songs.
Yeah. And I once watched a documentary on a plane that were more or less saying that you need to make like a gesture like 10,000 times until you can like start being good at it. Like, for example, if your job is like to cut like a piece of fish to make like nigiris, only after 10,000 times having done the same thing, then you can start having like the kind of like right gesture and kind of know what you're what you're doing. And it's the same with everything. Unless you're a genius, or unless you have like a lot of luck, which happen once again sometimes.
Maybe a place to go then would be to the end. Your final song on the album is The End. It's with Thundercat. Tell us a bit about where we have gone on this journey and where you want to leave us.
Yeah, this song, like, it was not pre-planned. And actually, these are the first words that came out of Thundercat's mouth when he started, like, singing on the song. And that was interesting because we wrote a top line for this song that seemed, like, perfect for us. And he really approached the track in a way that I've actually never seen before, but that makes sense knowing him as a musician, is that because like the chord progression it's a very long chord progression. It's not like a one or two or four bar loops. It's like very long. And so he listened to the song one time, like the demo. And then he was like, okay, he rolled his sleeves up and said, let's start. And he started kind of like building like a very long top line, beat by beat, just thinking, okay, I make this and then we go from there. Okay, so the previous like a line was that. So how do I go now from there? And doing a bit everything at the same time, which was surprising. And actually, like the first line he enters was like, is this the end? So there must be something in the music that kind of triggered this kind of thought in his mind. And we had like a Neverender. He started this song with The End, and the whole landscape of that track sounds a bit like a closing track. And so we didn't think twice about it. We're like, okay, like, is this the end? Yeah, it's gonna be like the closer of this of this album.
I remember when I first heard the album all the way through in a listening session with you both, that when it got to the end, I wasn't ready for it to be over, and I was ready for it to restart. And so the album can go from the end back to the beginning, never ender, kind of in this endless DJ loop.
That's the ideal scenario, and this is how we would love people to listen to this record. Unfortunately, we kind of think that only a small fraction of the listeners will actually listen to the record from top to bottom, but that's fine. For those who have the patience, it might be a good way. Although I'm not sure, because it's like the album is only like 49 minutes, I think, 50 minutes, but it's also quite...
It's a lot to take.
Personally, I find that it's a lot to take, and I'm not sure I would want to immediately listen back to the album again, but maybe we're just not endurant enough.
Living in the world of hyperdrama for too long can do a lot to one's nerves.
Yeah, it can be a bit draining, yeah.
Well, it definitely feels like a work that is... as much as there is great dance music in here, this is one for me. I want to lie down, close my eyes, and experience the entire thing, because I do feel like I am being guided on some kind of path that I haven't quite seen before. These unusual song structures, these sometimes uncomfortable sounds, these sounds that I don't know what I'm hearing because of how they've been processed so many times. It almost feels like, music that requires that kind of deep listening, and also for fun as well.
Yeah, it has to stay playful for fun.
Yes, that's a very good description. I'm buying it.
I found this very delightful and insightful, and that I am excited to go and listen even more deeply to the album again and again.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks
Take
a lot.
Care.
Switched on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, engineering by Brandon McFarlane, editing by Art Chung, illustrations by Russ Gottlieb, community management by Abby Barr, and our executive producer is Nishat Kerwa. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is a part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe to New York Magazine at nymag.com/pod. You can find all of Switched on Pop at Switched on Pop on all social media and at switchedonpop.com, where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. We'll be back again on Tuesday, and until then, thanks for listening.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.